Experience the joy of running in the new Triumph 22 from Saucony, the original running brand. Stacked with luxury foam cushioning, Triumph 22 turns miles into smiles with the ultimate blend of comfort and energy return. Shop Triumph 22 at Saucony.com. That's S-A-U-C-O-N-Y.com.
For 25 years, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard. So is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Hello and welcome back to Highway to Hoover, a production of SEC Extra over at D1Baseball.com. I'm your host, Joe Healy, joined as always by my good friend and co-host, Mark Etheridge. We're going to recap week five of the season, first weekend of SEC play in the books. And we talked about on opening day on this podcast about how you have to kind of get used to the rhythms of the season again, and getting used to the rhythms of a conference weekend was also a thing where I noted on Friday that every game started between 6:30 and 7:30 Eastern time. So they were all kind of like cascading and washing over me at the same time. So that took a little readjustment, but you know, and then Sunday, of course, they're all starting at 1 or 2 Eastern for the most part. So there's, again, another wave after that. So on that day. So it took, you know, you got to keep your head on a swivel. It took a little getting used to, but we'll get there. We'll get there and into midseason form before too much longer. But go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying, it's challenging, especially if you're at a game, too, because then they're all going on at the same time. Plus, you're kind of locked in on what's going on. So it's challenging, right, to try to follow and make sure what's going on. So what I try to do is I'll have a game streaming on the ESPN Plus, you know, app, and I'll kind of watch. And then, you know, if it starts to get non-competitive, I'll flip to something else. Meanwhile, you know, I'm watching the game I'm at. And I'm sort of monitoring, you know, between pitches or between innings or what have you, everything else. And it's just kind of information overload because, as you mentioned, they're all going on at the same time, and there's no way you can keep up with everything.
Yeah, it's one thing, you know, first couple of weeks of the season where you know, some teams are playing their games even on Fridays at 3 or 4, and then you have some night games. But now everybody's pretty much in night game mode, so at least on Friday. You know, Saturday and Sunday are a different deal, obviously, but yeah, so that is a challenge. I tend to be the same way. I used to try to monitor a lot more at any given time, but then I've kind of found if I try to watch too much, I'm really watching nothing. And so I've tried to kind of curtail that a little bit. We will get into recapping the first week of SEC play here in just a second. But first, I have to let you know that this episode of Highway to Hoover and every episode of Highway to Hoover is brought to you by PitchLogic, the system used by players, coaches, scouts, and instructors at all levels of play, from youth leagues to the big leagues. The easy-to-use and affordable technology makes the platform accessible to every player at every level. All the metrics and features used at the highest level. See PitchLogic.com for more information. Okay, Mark. Well, I feel like there's only one place to start, and that's for a couple reasons. One, it's where you were, but also it was the marquee series of the weekend by most measures, at least. And that was Florida and A&M in Gainesville. Yeah. I will give you a pointed question first, and you can use that as a jumping off point to other observations. As it stands now, so for those who didn't see it, I'm not sure who wouldn't have, but Florida wins 2 of 3. The series was kind of a mirror image of itself in that, you know, Florida won with a bunch of home runs on Friday. A&M won with a bunch of home runs on Saturday. Both pitching staffs gave up some runs. And then on Sunday, a lot closer game, or a lower scoring game, I should say, also close, that Florida pulls out thanks to a late home run. So seeing what you saw this weekend, whose pitching staff do you feel like you have more confidence in moving forward as it stands right now, Florida's or A&M's?
Right now would be A&M. I really like what they got out of the bullpen. I mean, Chris Cortez was electric. I mean, he's 98 with a really nasty slider. If he gives you that's a game changer, because he gives you that right-handed option, because you got Evan Aschenbach, who was really good on Saturday in their win. His 4 scoreless innings and probably could have gone a little longer. I mean, that to me, I think their starting pitching when they're not facing a team like Florida is going to be really good. And their bullpen is rounding into form. Shane Sadeo has become kind of the de facto closer. He closed a couple of games weekend. That's another big arm. So I think, you know, as it states right now, I think A&M has better pitching staff. However, Florida is playing so many freshmen on the mound, pitching so many freshmen on the mound, and they are taking their lumps right now. You don't know what you're going to get from game to game. They may be lights out. They may give up. You may not retire a batter, and that's kind of and that's difficult. You know, if you're going to send one of them out there, you don't know what you're going to get. I do think that by May, they're really talented. That Florida is going to be a really good pitching staff, and they're not right now, but there's talent. And as that talent gains experience and you kind of formalize who's going to pitch, you know, in what role, I think, you know, Paul's that is such a high ceiling group that their pitching staff is going to be really good. And if it is because of how good the lineup is, this could be a team that could, you know, they could win it all. And that's kind of weird because of how much they've struggled early in the year to say that, but you watch that talent. You watch, you know, Caglione swing the bat. You watch Colby Shelton. You watch Luke Heyman. You watch those cats swing it, and you realize that this is a team that, you know, that they're going to wreck a lot of ERAs this year because they're going to hit so many home runs, so many doubles, so many. And the part that really struck me is I knew those guys were good, right, along with Cade Curlin. But what I wasn't aware is how good Ty Evans and Tyler Shelnutt and that next group of hitters were that lengthens that lineup. And I mean, maybe the bottom of the lineup's a question, but 1 through 6, 7, depending on how it's structured that day, is a really, really formidable group that's going to wreck people. And because of that, you don't have to be as fine on the mound. Okay. So that gives the pitchers time to kind of grow up into these roles. And, you know, it's what I was talking to Sully about this. It's not that important that they be great in March. It's important that they be great in May and June. And I think that's, you know, that's kind of where they're heading because they're really talented kids that are gaining experience.
Yeah, it's a good point you make about Florida's lineup because I would actually say that if you compare the lineups, I'm not so sure I don't like A&M's more right now. And part of that is, you know, against left-handers, you know, Florida was running out a lineup that included at the same time Tanner Garrison, Landon Russell, and Jalen Guy. And yeah. That feels pretty light at the back end. Now, those guys all do different things. You know, Garrison is a great defensive catcher. Jalen Guy is a great defensive center fielder. Those guys in particular bring value, but it does make the back end of that lineup a little bit light. And even with a more normal lineup, you that will also include Michael Robertson and Dale Thomas, and that's still pretty light. You know, Michael Robertson hasn't necessarily taken the step forward that we kind of thought we might see, and that could still be coming. And then in the Dale Thomas is still hitting around 200. So at this point, I think I might lean A&M just with the way they're swinging it. You know, I mean, Montgomery's been so good. Ted Burton's been so good. Laviolette's been so good. You know, they've got guys riding the bench right now that I think would start just about anywhere else. Like so they've just got a lot of depth there. So I'm not saying Florida's offense can't be neck and neck, and don't misunderstand me, it's still an elite offense just because of how good the top to middle of that order is. But if we're comparing best on best, A&M and Florida, I think right now I take the Aggies. But man, my biggest takeaway from that series, and this is not a unique thought, our colleague Kendall Rogers said this, I think you've said something similar, Mark, is that it feels like these two teams are right in the same area code in terms of how good they are. In a lot of ways, they feel like mirror images of each other.
Yeah, they are really similar. I mean, you look at the top three in a lineup, I'd go A&M. If you extend that to top six, I'd go Florida. If you go 1 through 9, yeah, you probably flip back to A&M, right? So I think that's kind of where we are with these teams. The thing that really struck me with A&M is with Grahovic, Laviolette, and Montgomery, those 1-2 hitters, I mean, it is a gauntlet, man. It is so difficult to come in and face those three guys consecutively and feel like you're going to have success. I mean, I think they combined for 5 home runs this weekend. I mean, it was just they're. I mean, that's as good a first 3 guys in the lineup as I think you're going to find anywhere in the country. If there's someone better, point it out. I'd like to see it. And I think after that, you have a lot of older guys, veteran hitters, so many college bees, and they really make things work. And I think that's the thing that, you know, A&M, I mean, with Slosh's system, that's what they always do. They see a lot of pitches. They make pitchers work, and they pound mistakes. And you got older hitters who really understand how to do that. And it just makes those top guys so much better because they're turning over so much more because you're lengthening, you know, what you're seeing on the mound. So I came away impressed. A&M lost the series, but I am really impressed with that team. They're going to win a lot of games this year. And I have to think that they're in great shape to be, you know, a top 8 seed, just like Florida, you know, is in position to be despite their midweek losses.
Yeah. Let's move on to a couple of teams that were a little more surprising in how impressive they looked. The Florida A&M series, as fun as it was, I don't think there's really either team winning that series would have been like, sure, fine. Yep. I believe that. But the two Mississippi schools, good weekends. Mississippi State winning 2 of 3 against LSU at home over the weekend and doing it, frankly, in bludgeoning LSU a couple of days, right? I mean, just so surprising in that regard. And then Ole Miss wins its series against South Carolina. They won the first 2 games of that series to take the series early on before, you know, one just got away from them on Sunday against South Carolina. So I'll answer this question first since the last question I put on you first. Because to prepare you, I'm going to ask, which do you find to be more impressive of the two? I would go State, I think, for a couple reasons. One is there's still the mystique of, hey, LSU's the defending national champions, and it's clear that they're not as talented as they were last year. Let me take that back. They might be nearly as talented, but they are clearly not as good as that team right now. That's just, I think, a fact at this point. They're still the defending national champions. It's a relative rivalry. I mean, Mississippi State, LSU, I mean, those are two baseball powers. That's
not relative. It's a rivalry.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. You know, I'll let the guy who lives in the state of Alabama tell me how much, but yeah, so that's, you know, that's a rivalry, and it was chippy. Like there were chippy moments in that series, especially on Friday night. So there's that. So all of that combined. Oh, and the biggest thing for me is just that State won the 2 games and almost came back to win the middle game, the one they lost, in a way that they could not have done last year. Period. End of story. Like, just take the middle game, for example, the game they lost. They're down 9-1, like in the 3rd inning. Mm-hmm. Now, last year's team might have still scored some runs because last year's lineup was really good, but that game ends like 17-7. They'd have been run ruled 17-7 in 7 or 8 innings. Instead, the bullpen comes in and holds LSU at bay for the last 6 innings of that game. And Mississippi State's offense roars back and really just comes 1 or 2 plays short of winning that thing. So, and then you combine that with the other 2 days where the pitching was good from the jump, you know, and really got them out to a good start and held things. And the offense just stayed with LSU and then ran away with it. And that could not have looked any more different than what Mississippi State was last year. Now, will it hold? Yeah. I don't know. But like, I think we can still say, even if we don't know if that's totally going to hold, that this was not a series that at all looked like the team we saw on the field last year or the year before, for that matter.
Yeah, and it didn't look fluky either. I mean,
I'm with you. Yeah.
It looked like this was a really good team, and they pitched it well. And, you know, we've had some questions about the offense, and we did not have questions on the offense this weekend because they pounded a really good LSU pitching staff that's going to give people problems for all season. You know, the point you bring up about, okay, they had 2 decisive wins, and then the Saturday game, the one they lost, they roared back and made a game of it, and there was a really close play at the plate that, I mean, it's within inches, right, of that being a tie game. And if, you know, LSU doesn't make that play, you know, throws maybe a little bit off, Mississippi State ties it, and who knows, they may be playing for a sweep. And that's, I mean, you think about all of the, you know, the turmoil that program the last couple of years and how everybody wants to fire Chris, right? And I just, you know, for them to go through and have this kind of weekend, it's got to be cathartic for the program. It's got to, you got to be uplifted and you got to hope. And I think that's something that, you know, when I was there a few weeks ago, there was not hope. They were making, you know, hey, here's my hot list of new next coaches we're going to have next year. That kind of chatter. You know, man, you're not having that conversation right now, buddy. I mean, they played really well. And I know the schedule is tough because it's tough for everyone. It's especially tough for Mississippi State early. But the way they played at home, with the way that atmosphere looked, at least from the part I could see watching it, you know, from a press box at another game, that place looked rowdy and raucous, and they were into it, and it affected the game. It absolutely did. And if they can continue to do that, oh, boy. I mean, Mississippi State's going to have a good year. And, you know, you talk about the ping, you talk about the offense. Dakota Jordan is having an all-SEC player of the year kind of season. If they continue to have guys around him, Hunter Hines had a great weekend. Mershawn, Amarni Larry, all those guys are performing well. If that continues, this is a team – I mean, they, you know, we didn't expect them to, you know, be a contender, but if they play like this, they absolutely will, especially at home. I think that they've got a chance to be great. You know, you mentioned Ole Miss, and I didn't really know what to expect this weekend with South Carolina coming in. When I look at South Carolina, I think about a team that's kind of good everywhere, but not great anywhere. And I wondered how Ole Miss would handle a team that wasn't going to give you a lot, okay? And they were able to win a really close game on Friday. They could have gone either way, and they got it done. They had a home run fiesta on Saturday. Andrew Fisher hit three. I think they hit five or six in the game. I mean, it was something crazy. And then Sunday, South Carolina kind of, okay, we got our backs to the wall. We got to get something done, and they did, and credit to them. But I think that Ole Miss has got to be feeling good. Remember how last year started? It didn't, you know, it was such, they dug themselves such a hole right away and just kind of, you know, cartwheeled out of, you know, to a place that they didn't want to be. And I do think that having that good start, I know they go to Knoxville next weekend and that's going to be difficult. But just the fact that they were able to take a series right away, just kind of, I don't know, affirms that what they're doing is that they're getting back to the places where they want to be. This league is so brutal. Everybody's going to go through it. You're going to have ups and downs like LSU. You know, they're going through a down right now. They have Florida come in, you know, a rematch of the CWS. That's a, you know, a really fun matchup coming up, and not a team you want to see if you're not feeling good about yourself. And that's what everyone's going to go through. And for Mississippi State and Ole Miss, they're on the up right now. And, you know, in a couple of weeks, we may be having a different conversation. But boy, you got to enjoy it while you can. And right now, both of those clubs are feeling great about themselves.
No doubt. Yeah, the thing about Ole Miss is similar to State. I mean, they won those games and did some things they just weren't capable of doing last year. It doesn't sound like much, but they got five innings from all three of their starters. Yeah. Which, you know, I was tempted to go back and look, but like, I don't know that happened at all last year. It's in conference play that they got five innings from all three guys. But then the bullpen, 12 and a third innings pitched on the weekend and with one run allowed. And again, that's something
that's great.
That team was not capable of doing last year. So impressive stuff all around. And I, you know, part of the reason I choose State is more impressive over Ole Miss. And I don't want to immediately jump into like, the potential downside of it, but I think we'll learn a lot about South Carolina this weekend against Vanderbilt. You know, they've four of their five losses have come to now to Clemson or Ole Miss, and three of those four were 5-4 games. So they're, you know, a handful of runs away from having a very different experience so far this season. Yeah. And so on one hand, it's easy to see them as being really, really close, and they are. But on the other hand, it's like, well, if you're going to be a really good team, though, at some point you have to start winning those games. And this weekend they're at home against Vanderbilt, and we'll see how they compete. But if they come out of it losing that series again, then you start to maybe reevaluate, like, okay, maybe is South Carolina not the measuring stick that we thought they were. But obviously we'll talk about that when we get there.
It's one thing I mentioned in the weekend dish that we posted Monday morning is that South Carolina is just a team that doesn't have a lot of margin of error. I think they're going to play a lot of close games. I think their offense is good. It's not great. Their pitching staff is good. It's not great. Same thing with their defense. I don't think they're going to excel in any area. They're not going to be negligent in any area. And I think that's going to keep them in it. But, I mean, if you're a Gamecock fan, you know, take your Pepto-Bismol to the games, because it's going to be, you know, a lot of tight stuff. And you're going to win some and you lose some. But I think that's the kind of year that it's going to be.
I think that's right. It's a great way to put it. You know, they do a lot of things pretty well, but there's no one thing we can point to that we think they're going to be elite at. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that's right on. Let's talk about Alabama-Tennessee. Alabama comes away with a series win at home. By the way, I should have mentioned this up top. Home teams won every series this weekend, which, you know, I don't think will that's not a huge surprise, although it is a surprise at all seven, right? I mean, most weeks I think it'll be like the home team is – okay, well, actually, let's pause here. Let's hear it on your theory on that before we get on to Alabama-Tennessee.
I think that very few teams challenge themselves – and took a road trip, and you got all new rosters in this transfer portal era, and you have a lot of people who have not experienced the kind of road atmospheres that SEC venues provide, and there's an adjustment, okay? There's an adjustment from a competition standpoint. There's an adjustment from just an atmosphere, and hey, these guys are really good, and all these people are here, and they're against me. Okay, they're pulling for this other team and they're booing every time I do something good. And I think, you know, some guys, there's an adjustment that has to occur. And, you know, we saw it all through. I mean, the only team who really took a road trip in pre-conference was Florida, who went to Miami. Okay, well, Florida played at home this weekend, so we didn't see that. Missouri went to Cal Poly, but I'm not really counting that as a raucous road environment. Okay, so everyone is kind of going through this for the first time. And I think that played a big role in it, because a lot of these were there was at least one close game that swung the series for these that went 2-1. And I do think it mattered whether you had that road experience or not. And we'll see as that stabilizes. Of course, there will road teams have more success as they get more experience. But I do think that, especially, you know, for the first SEC weekend, that does matter.
Mark is just straight up disrespecting Baggett Stadium in San Luis Obispo. Go get him, Mustang fans. Come after him. it's a good point you make, just because, you know, a number of teams go to play in these tournaments, but A, that's a neutral site, not a true road environment. And B, 9 times out of 10, the SEC club in those scenarios is going to have more fans there than the others. Like the one exception you might make is, you know, LSU, they went to Minute Maid and they played Texas. And like, that might've been 50-50. I don't know. You know,
it's one game.
Well, exactly. Yes. Yeah. So your point certainly stands, but Alabama wins 2 of 3 against Tennessee. And that's a series that series win is going to age like fine wine, because I come out of it thinking nothing less about Tennessee, because I mean, all of the following is true. AJ Causey threw the ball well again. He looks like he's a real Friday guy. Drew Beam didn't throw the ball well, but he's Drew Beam. He'll be fine. Right. AJ Russell got back on the mound and all signs were that, okay, he's trending in the right direction. So that's great. You just lost a series to a good Alabama team on the road. Like, that happens. And the games they lost were close, you know, relatively speaking. So I come out of that feeling nothing negative about Tennessee. And if anything, feeling better, because, hey, Russell's healthy now and they acquitted themselves pretty well on the road. And the lineup handled the good arms that Alabama threw at them for the most part, you know, but impressive on Alabama's part that they didn't get a great start from Ben Hess. and they figured out a way to win that series.
Yeah.
The degree of difficulty on that is extreme for Alabama, yeah. and they pulled it off. So I, more than any one thing on the field, I mean, I guess we could like dig in on the field stuff, but more than anything else, like the most impressive part of that for me for Alabama was just that they figured it out and they like muddled through it, and they're just dealing with, the injuries. You know, Riley Quick on the mound has made them a little bit shorter. Okay, Ben Hess doesn't pitch great. We're just gonna figure it out. And that's a skill. You know, I've talked about that on the main podcast. Runes and I have talked about that. Like winning is a skill, and Alabama found a way on a weekend where there were some things just working against them.
Yeah, with Vaughn in his first SEC.
Yeah, right.
World Series. JJ, pitching coach, figured it out, man. I mean, when you think about not having Quick, Hess doesn't give you much. He didn't really get much. He just couldn't throw strikes. And then Ferone comes out and throws a gem on Saturday and gets you to fade Davis. And then Davis finishes it off like he often does. But then they're kind of burned. So then you go into Sunday and you're throwing Hagan Banks, who's not stretched out yet. I think he went through two innings. And then you're just trying to piece it together. And Braden Myers threw three scoreless innings. That was huge. Heiberger came in and got him to the ninth. Then they try to give it away. They drop a fly ball. They have a bad throw to first. They basically give, load the bases for Tennessee. And then they bring in Moza, who gave up four hits, four runs in the game Friday when they got drilled in one inning. Okay. And you hand the ball to him, who's really struggled the last couple of times. He comes out, he walks in a run, but since they had a two-run lead because Gage Miller hit a three-run bomb, they're able to he gets the other two guys on strikes. Basically, just came in burying curveballs and was able to have some success with it. So, I mean, that's a gutty win. That's a game that Alabama really, really needed to kind of affirm what they're doing, establish that, hey, I know we were good last year. We lost all our players, but we're still here. We didn't go anywhere. And I do think that the offense played well against a very good Tennessee pitching staff. I think you made a great point there. When Russell gets stretched out, that's going to be a rotation that's going to match up with anybody because of how good the other guys have been. Really love their offense. And they're not just nine deep. They're 12, 13 deep. And that's a team that's going to wreck a lot of ERAs like we talked about with A&M in Florida. So, I don't feel any worse about Tennessee, but I do kind of feel a little more bullish on Alabama that they're able to do that. We'll see what they can do. They go to Georgia next weekend. That'll be kind of an interesting deal after what happened with Georgia, and we can talk about that. But I do think that Alabama's a place where, we've got them ranked pretty high, in the top 15 anyway. So I think they're a team that's certainly with an upward trajectory right now.
Agreed. Yeah. Impressive stuff all around. You're right. You brought back the memory. I'd kind of forgotten how crazy that ninth inning was on Sunday. Classic closer behavior from Moza to need to crank up the pressure to 100 in order to really just get himself where he needed to be. He had the breaking ball. That's right. Yeah, Mitch Williams. There's a throwback name there. Back when he was the only guy in the league who threw hard. Now Mitch Williams would be like the slop tossing guy in the bullpen compared to everybody else. He had the breaking ball working, but sometimes you know how it goes when that's your pitch, like you're going to spike some and you're going to hit guys and you're going to, impressive all around for Alabama. And it's too early to really dive into this, but you and I talk a lot on this podcast about the math in SEC baseball and how you kind of know what win totals you need to get to do certain things. And taking this series off of Tennessee, even if it was a home series, in my mind is something that like, okay, now you've given yourself some slack to have a weekend where like, whoops, we lost 2-3 to insert team here that we should not have lost to, because on paper, even on the road, I think there were a lot of folks, maybe myself included, if I'd had to pick it, would have gone Tennessee. And that would have, I think that would have been reasonable, but Alabama does it. And so their math just gets slightly easier as the season goes on. You start stacking these and that's how you end up in a good spot. So,
yeah, I mean, I think Tennessee's one of the top 7-8 teams in the country.
Oh, agreed.
And,
yeah.
And Alabama beat them. So, you know, maybe Alabama, I wouldn't put them at that level, but they're kind of that next group. And that's a great place to be, especially March when you got a lot of time to kind of figure some things out.
No doubt about that.
Hey, everyone. We're going to take a quick break from our discussion to hear a couple ads from our sponsors.
Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.
Hey guys, Conan O'Brien here to tell you about some of the stranger things we've been doing recently on my podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Recently, we had an episode where I sat down with some of the writers that I worked with on Conan O'Brien Must Go. That's my travel show on Max. And we talked about everything that goes into those shows and a lot of very insane anecdotes from our travels and adventures. There's another episode you might want to check out where I discuss with my physician, Dr. Arroyo, about my experience on Hot Ones. We talk about my near-death experience and his complete inability to help me because he may or may not be a real doctor. That's just some of the stuff that's been going on, and if you feel up to it, check it out. So catch up on all things I've been up to on Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to bring coziness into your life, you turn to Barefoot Dreams. Now celebrating 30 years of coziness, Barefoot Dreams is the originator of everyone's favorite Luxe Home blanket. There's a reason why Barefoot Dreams has been on Oprah's Favorite Things list 6 times. Dressing head to toe in Barefoot Dreams is the key to comfort, as its ultra-soft robes, loungewear, and accessories are each made with premium materials. Get 15% off your first purchase at barefootdreams.com with the code PODCAST15.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
Vanderbilt Auburn, surprising in a different way. Vanderbilt winning the series, not a surprise. Vanderbilt sweeping the series, a little surprising, but Vanderbilt handling Auburn the way they did. Very just surprising. Pounding.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Sunday's game was a little closer.
Yeah,
but Vanderbilt's offense is like 2 or 3 standard deviations better than I thought they were going to be. You know, yes, the nitpick of like, well, they don't hit for as much power, which that's my impression of me saying that in the preseason because we harped on that so much. And I was a big part of that on this show, but they've kind of worked around it just with like, everybody hits in that lineup. And they may not, Sunday, they may not have.
Yeah. Sunday they had 15 singles. Okay.
Well, right.
Play. If you get that many, that works. You don't have to hit it out of the park.
Yeah. 15 of any kind of hit is usually going to be enough to get the job done. Yeah. Yeah. I come away from this thinking like, were there guys on Auburn's pitching staff that did not have good days? Yes. However, I see this as much more of an endorsement of Vanderbilt's lineup than I do any sort of indictment against Auburn's pitching staff.
Yeah. And if you're Auburn, that's what you're hoping. Because, you know, they had pitched pretty well, but they had some kind of ups and downs. And when up starting SEC play, obviously you want to pitch better than that. But I do think, you know, sometimes you just run into a buzzsaw. And I think that's what they saw with Vandy. It'll be really interesting next weekend. Auburn hosts Arkansas, who's a team that obviously we'll talk about this in a minute. You can just, you know, pitch lights out, but you don't exactly know what you're going to get offensively. And maybe Auburn's pitchers will have more success there, but they could not handle the Vandy's attack. And, you know, the thing I was so impressed with Vandy is it wasn't just like a couple of guys. It was the entire lineup that just, you know, it was just massacred Auburn. There was no let up in the lineup. And if you have lineup depth, you're not giving people outs, you know, kind of like what we talked about with Florida. That, you know, bottom of the lineup's not great. You know, there's some other teams you could say that about. With Vandy, everyone was hitting and everyone was putting pressure on the Auburn pitching staff, and they were not able to respond.
Yeah, it's just it's so comprehensive what Vanderbilt's doing offensively. I mean, not only are they hitting 330 as a team, they've also stolen 50 bases, which, yeah, you know, you take Enrique Bradfield off this team and somehow they're like running more, which is, yeah, a little bit of a, as a group, they're running more. I mean, they have a couple, you know, RJ Austin and Calvin Hewitt account for 28 of those 50. So sure, you've got a couple of guys who are running more, but everybody's doing a little bit, it seems like, in that regard. And Alan Espinal, who won Player of the Week honors, not just for us, but for the league itself. Like, he's quietly been a really good story for them. He, a guy who really has been a platoon player the last few years with Jack Bulger and moved around a little bit. And now he's, you know, Bulger's been hurt, which has been part of it, but he's been in there every day. And now he's kind of just earned the benefit of the doubt of, hey, this is our guy every day. So that, you know, just, you know, and especially when you consider the Bulger injury, sure, but also Chris Maldonado has been limited to 5 games this year. You know, he hasn't played. So, but then you know, I thought Braden Holcomb, the freshman, was going to be, hey, if they're going to be really good, they're going to need Braden Holcomb to be a guy. And he hasn't been. And maybe that's okay. Maybe he's a 2025 guy, right? I mean, these things take time, but there's a lot of things that haven't that I thought were going to have to go right that haven't necessarily gone right. And this lineup seems not better for it, but just like, they're better than I thought they'd be, even in the scenario where those things went right. So I'm jazzed up to see them this weekend. I kind of suspect that it's a bad matchup for South Carolina, this lineup, because South Carolina is kind of a pitch to contact kind of lineup. And it's a great, that's a great point. South Carolina likes to pitch to contact, and that just feel for a team that has bat to ball skills the way this Vanderbilt lineup does. I just kind of wonder if that's going to be a problem. We'll see.
You know, it is funny that we've talked about Vandy for 5-6 minutes now, have not mentioned any pitchers. Holman was really good on Friday. Cunningham was pretty good Saturday, and Futura battled and got through and did his thing on Sunday. He wasn't as sharp as he sometimes is, but, you know, it's Grayson Carr came in, did his thing. I think, you know, they just got so many weapons and so many power arms that can throw at you that's a team. I mean, it's ceiling as high as any in the country. And if they continue to find offense and batter people the way they did this weekend, yeah, I mean, you got to love their chances to have a huge year.
You could say a lot of the same things about their pitching staff that you say about the lineup too, right? I mean, going into the year, you know, they haven't really gotten David Horn back yet. He's thrown an inning. Sam Hlaboki's not been good. Levi Huseman, the transfer from Coastal, has pitched once. Sawyer Hawks, the Air Force transfer, has an ERA of 10.50. Ethan McIlvain hasn't really totally settled in as a freshman. And if you'd have told me all of those things before this, and by the way, like, Grayson Carter is not going to stick in the rotation, which is, you know, something we'd heard was like, oh, he's going to start. We're going to start him. If you'd have told me all of those things, I would have been like, you know, like, whoa, like the, trouble in paradise, but here they are. Right. I mean, they've gotten, you mentioned the rotation. I mean, they've even got a legit Tuesday guy with JD Thompson, you know, they've got the luxury of having a guy they throw on Tuesdays. And so, they're in a really good spot. Like, no other way to put it. So in the offseason, I spent a lot of time, because of the pitching, kind of saying like, you know, I suspect 2024 might be a big Vanderbilt year. And then I kind of came off that a little bit. And now I wish I'd stuck with it, because now I'm kind of back on board of like, actually, this team might be special. We'll have to see. But, and for different reasons than I thought, right? I mean, that's part of the reason why, even if I had stuck with it, I shouldn't get credit for it, because it's for reasons different than the ones I assumed. But yet here we are.
Yeah, I think that Corbin guy's, I think he's going to be okay. I think he's going to.
Yeah, don't say. Yeah, just a young kid that we're just going to see how he handles it.
He's got a good future.
Young up and coming head coach in the game. A couple more series here. Let's talk Kentucky Georgia briefly. Kentucky offensively just walloped Georgia's pitching staff, and you know, I wrote this in the vibes rankings I put out today because Georgia took a hit in the vibes rankings, you might imagine. It's one thing to lose the series on the road to Kentucky. That's one thing. It's quite another to get swept. And then it's quite another on top of that to get swept in the manner in which they did. Yeah, because the Kentucky offense, could they be more physical this year? Yeah, and I wrote a little bit of that in the fall report that I did on them. But I don't know that they're going to be this physical the rest of this. I doubt they're going to be this physical the rest of the season. So I actually come out of it, you know, it's week one of SEC. I don't want to overreact, but it kind of makes me worry like, is Georgia going to have a real problem here?
Yeah. The pitching is the concern. They didn't hit like they had been, but how could they? I mean, they had just
put up
video game numbers, of course. And they didn't hit home runs. And if Georgia doesn't hit home runs, I'm not sure how they score. So that's a concern. But normally that's just part of what you do. When you go through pre-conference, you get into conference play, you know, and the games that you were scoring 8 to 9 in, you're scoring 4 to 5 or 6 to 7. And you're able to do that because you pitch well enough that it doesn't really matter. And Georgia, for me, I mean, we'll see what happens once they get home. Everybody, as we talked about, everybody tended to play better at home. So we'll see. But they didn't pitch well enough. And they don't really have, the guy that you can hand the ball to and, hey, he's going to give me 6-7 innings and I feel good about it. And, you know, there are teams in this league that have a couple of those or sometimes more. And you don't have to do it every week, but you need it, you know, where you're not just, you know, really scrambling through a weekend. And Kentucky, who had not been one of the SEC's best offenses, really kind of toyed with Georgia's pitching this weekend. They did whatever they wanted and won 3 games handily. So if you're Georgia, you got to flush it. You got to come home. They play Alabama, who's feeling really good about themselves. That's another really good lineup that you're going to have to face, and you're probably going to have to outscore them. And so we'll see what happens there. But on the Kentucky side of things, this is just what you wanted after last weekend. You know, you had the 2 games with Kennesaw that were just, I don't know, just puzzling for me. Did not see that coming. And, you know, like we talked about with some other teams, they were able to flush it and move on and look like a whole different team this weekend. And then they go to Missouri, who is really struggling to swing the bats and struggling to pitch at times. And I think Kentucky's got a great shot to certainly win the series, maybe even sweep it. And if they start 6-0, that's a huge advantage on everyone else in the conference. If Kentucky can do that, because then it's, you know, you find 9 more wins the rest of the year, you're 15-15 and you're right in the hunt. So they're in great position. If you're a Wildcat fan, you got to be kind of giddy right now. And that's going to be an interesting story to follow.
Yeah, it's, I'm glad you brought that up because I had thought about that too. I mean, you never want to assume a sweep, but man, like Mizzou struggled so much offensively. Like it's on the table for Kentucky. And if they start off 6-0 in SEC play, I think we're going to be in a situation we were last year with them. They're going to get off to a really good start. We'll see if the RPI likes them as much. I suspect that their non-conference opponents, actually I'm pretty confident in this because I don't think there's an Indiana State in that group, but the RPI is probably not going to like their non-conference opponents as much this year as last year. But, we know that the primary, right? Yeah. So they're on that path. And we know that the thing that matters most is taking care of business in the SEC, and the back half of their schedule in the conference in particular is brutal. However, this team is good enough to compete with the best teams in this league and pick off game at a bare minimum, even in road series, pick off games here and there, which is exactly what they did last year, right? They won the series they were supposed to. They swept South Carolina when South Carolina was, really kind of starting to fall off. So they took advantage of that. And then in basically every other series against good teams, they just avoided getting swept. And I don't want to put limits on what this team can do, but I'm just saying that this feels very similar to last year's path, and we saw how that turned out. Now, there are nitpicks. Travis Smith still not really throwing the ball great. You know, he's still getting hit around a little bit, but Nyman has been good. Mason Moore has been good. They found some bullpen pieces, it seems like. They're getting healthier. Grant Smith was back in the lineup. He's still a little bit limited, but you know, he's back in the lineup, which is good because he's such an important piece, particularly on the defensive end. So they're getting a little healthier. That's good news. But yeah, they're in a good position to get off to a fast start here and put themselves right back where they were last year, which was obviously hosting and what have you. And also being one of the most polarizing teams in the country, because there were a lot of folks who kind of looked at them and were like, are we sure, you know, and you know, the results were what they were, though. And you can't argue with that so much. So they are on that path again. Our final series, Arkansas, Missouri. And I don't want to be disrespectful, Mark, but I think the results are exactly what the scoreline suggested they were. Mizzou pitched okay at times, especially on Sunday. I think Pimentel started on Saturday. But they had moments where they pitched good. It okay. Yeah. But man, the offense, like, they scored one run in 27 innings.
It was a solo home.
Yeah. And look, Arkansas might have the best rotation in the country when it's all said and done. Like, I don't think that's hyperbolic. However, you got to score more than one run. Like, you just do.
Three games. I don't know. 27 innings.
Yeah. And we knew their offense was likely going to be light. Like, we're not shocked that, hey, they struggled offensively against Arkansas's pitching on the road, but it's just tough. Like, woof. I don't know how else to put it. I mean, the flip side, of course, is that Arkansas pitching was great, and we should laud them for that, because, you know, the Missouri players are on an SEC roster too, you know, and they have scholarships. So the way they pitched is impressive regardless of opponent. And then offensively, it felt like the machine was starting to come to life a little bit. I mean, again, we can look at the opponent, everything fine, but Peyton Stovall is looking a little bit better. Nolan Souza has been really good as a freshman. Like, maybe he's an answer there. So if you want to kind of start to look for some of these positive signs for Arkansas offensively, which has been the concern, I think you can look at this past weekend and find some.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's an elite pitching staff. And it's not just the starters, although the starters are incredible, but it's how many options they have in relief. They're just come at you in waves. And yeah, we've all questioned their offense at times, but I think it's ascending. It's better than it was a few weeks ago. And if that continues, some new players, some guys getting some seasoning, that's going to be fine. But the bottom line is they're not going to need to score a ton because the pitching is so good. So I think that, you know, Arkansas goes to Auburn. That'll be, you know, it's a tough play. Auburn's good at home. That'll be a nice test. So we'll learn a lot about the Razorbacks. You know, we talked about all the young players going on the road for the first time. That'll be something to watch. But with Missouri, I kind of echo your points. I mean, this doesn't look real promising. I know Arkansas is really good. I'm eager to see what they do at home against Kentucky pitching, which is good, but it's not Arkansas's. So if you struggle to score against the Wildcats at home, it's not going to be a good barometer of things to come. So it's a big series for Carey team for this year. They, you know, honestly, I mean, Kentucky is a good team. It's not the best team that's going to visit Columbia this year. It's going to pick some games off. You need to get at least one this weekend, or else this could be a really long year. So but the cool thing is there's so many opportunities in this league, and teams do get better. And, you know, what you are in March is not what you are in May. And maybe they'll be one of those teams.
Yeah, there's, I mean, we knew going into the year, and of course, a new coaching staff is not going to, especially led by a head coach in Kerrick Jackson, who is so positive and, you know, steadfast in his methods and being process oriented. Like, they're not going to come out and say this, but I think it was kind of understood that the 2024 season for Missouri has got to be more about process than results, and finding some guys who can be a part of getting it turned around in 25, 26 and beyond. That being said, like, there is a line below which it starts to get tough, right? Like, on some level, the results, just, you need something to hang your hat on, you know, because there's a difference in, you know, something like a 8-22 in the league, and hey, it was a tough go of it, but we're young and we're building, and then, or something less than that, right?
Where you're, you know,
ask Ole Miss how tough it was last year winning 6 league games, right? I mean, that's just, and that was a team coming off a national title, so at least they kind of had to, like, well, you know, flags fly forever, you know, like, you know, we'll take this one. But, you know, with Mizzou, it's, you know, you hope for their sake that there's some positive momentum, and I assume there will be on some level. But yeah, this weekend is big for them to show some life and show some fight, I think, more than anything else. And
get some runs. And
score some runs would be nice. Yeah, I think that's probably, yeah. Look, I'm just one man, but my opinion is they should probably score some more runs this weekend against Kentucky. Yeah, but we will have to see. Yeah. Yeah, more than one would be good. Yeah, one per game at bare minimum.
Yeah.
Progress. All right, Mark, that is going to do it for this episode of Highway to Hoover, a production of SEC Extra over at d1baseball.com. A couple quick notes here. One is that thank you for those who have gone on to their preferred podcast app and done a thumbs up or a like or a review. I have noticed an uptick in those, so we do greatly appreciate you guys doing that when we've asked. You can see the code down, if you're watching the video, you can see the code down at the bottom. Use the code SECPLAY24 to get 24% off any SEC Extra subscription. So make sure you're using that if you're kind of on the fence about jumping in with SEC Extra. We'd be humbled if you'd give us a shot, but make sure if you do so, you use the code SECPLAY24 to get 24% off of that subscription. We're trying to save you money here. You know, we are running a business here, but we're not unreasonable. You know, we're trying to get you in at a reasonable price. Mark and I are. So make sure you use that code. Thank you to PitchLogic for sponsoring this and every episode of Highway to Hoover. Thank you to Mark, as always, for joining me. And thank you, the listener, for listening. We'll talk to y'all soon.
The Highway to Hoover podcast is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcasts.
Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.
Hey guys, Conan O'Brien here to tell you about some of the stranger things we've been doing recently on my podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Recently, we had an episode where I sat down with some of the writers that I worked with on Conan O'Brien Must Go. That's my travel show on Max. And we talked about everything that goes into those shows and a lot of very insane anecdotes from our travels and adventures. There's another episode you might want to check out where I discuss with my physician, Dr. Arroyo, about my experience on Hot Ones. We talk about my near-death experience and his complete inability to help me because he may or may not be a real doctor. That's just some of the stuff that's been going on, and if you feel up to it, check it out. So catch up on all things I've been up to on Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend wherever you get your podcasts.